I'm Ken. I'm a grateful recovered sex addict. The first thing we got to start with is, why do I sponsor? Because I work a 12-step program, not an 11-and-a-half-step program. Yeah, I practice these principles in all our affairs. I get that. Yeah, what that means is I practice 10 and 11 with work, my home, my friends, my church, whatever. That's how I practice these principles in all my affairs. Besides just the 12-step program, besides just the people that I hurt in my addiction. But I am required to carry this message to sex addicts. This message, what is this message? This message is, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Why? Because I stay sober. And there, I need to understand, I'm not here to bring about a result. I'm here to stay sober. And that's why we tell the new guy that we're talking to, that we're 12-stepping, that, you know, it may be that you're helping me more than I'm helping you. Plain and simple. We're uniquely qualified to help a specific type of person. We're uniquely qualified to help that specific person with a specific solution. Someone who's got a specific problem, we have a specific solution. Okay, so we need to understand when we're 12-stepping, in that initial contact, we have a very specific list of instructions we're supposed to follow. I'm supposed to relate my experiences that demonstrate the two-part problem. Lack of control, loss of choice. And I won't talk about those as a lack of control and loss of choice. I will simply give these examples. I'll start with, once I start, I end up here. And once I started that, I ended up there. And if they're identifying, they're going, me too. I do that. Well, I finally reached a place where I said, I gotta stop. And now I start talking about unmanageability. I tried this to stop. I tried that to stop. I tried that. And so if they're not identifying and I'm out of stories to tell them, I hand them my card, my phone number, and say, give me a call if I can ever be of any help. And I walk away. Because, guys, if I've got to convince them, it's going to fail. It's going to fail. You know who the convincer is? God. He's got a big old 2x4 that he hit me over the head with enough times called sex addiction. Hit me once. Ow. Are you ready yet? No, let me try. Okay, there's another, right? If I'm trying to convince them, I'm trying to get between them and their last, quote, drink. That's dangerous. That's a bad idea. Because are you wasting your time? No, you're staying sober. Are you wasting their time? Maybe you're making their next bottom deeper, right? But the guy whose time you're wasting is the guy who's ready. The guy who's sitting in that hotel room with that gun looking at it. That's the guy whose time you're wasting with someone who's not ready. So he's identified. Yeah, I do that too. Well, you know, that's what makes me a sex addict. And if he does not say, I'm a sex addict too, based on the information you gave me, hand him the card. Call me if I can help you. The next stop is, I tell them about all the things I tried to stop. And at some point, you know, Chris Raymer talks about this. You're fishing. You're fishing and you're waiting for that guy to bite that hook. What does it look like when he bites that hook? He says, well, what did you do? Because your life should demonstrate not only did you have the same problem, but you found a way out that he didn't. And so, when he asks, well, what did you do? Right? Time to set the hook. He bit, it's time to set it. Well, I did this, I basically did these actions that put me in relationship with a higher power. A God, if you will. that which I think is most high in the universe. And guys, if he doesn't ask me, what did you do? I hand him my card. If he balks at the program, I hand him my card. I got to be willing to walk away from the situation. Because if he balks, he's not done. He's not desperate. Because that's what you want. The big book says again and again, we want them hamburgered. We want them ground down. We want their egos pulverized. We want them pliable. That's when they're most likely to follow direction. They're not at bottom. They're not at bottom. Here's the thing. First step is not done in our fellowship. It's not. It's done in the disease. Bottom is found out there, not in here. That's the first step experience, bottom. I am defeated. I am beaten. And guys, you know, the big deal on this is how do we get them through the work quickly? And the number one trip up, the number one trip up I see in this fellowship is its relationship with the psychiatric industry. They bring us tools that are not 12-step and call them 12-step. And the biggest one is formal first steps. Okay? What they do, Minnesota model, God bless them, it works for a lot of people that aren't one of us, you know, not like me, not chronic, not hopeless. So, you know, formal first steps are an intervention method from the Minnesota model meant to convince you that it'd be a good idea to stop. Whoa, wait a minute. Our third tradition says you got to walk in with a desire to stop. And it is not our job to convince you. You need to be convinced walking in that door. You want to stop. This formal first step writing taking God knows how long is going to kill people. Because what's it say on page 24? We are unable to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. That means I got to have a solution, a spiritual awakening before that month is out, or I'm going to go back out. Right? It's simple. So, if he's not done with step one walking in the door, we give him some simple instructions on how to get to bottom. Go act out some more. Or go try to stop some more. Go try these other methods. Because 12-step is a weapon of last resort. It only works for people who got no other options. The only other option, you know, we each pursued the same solution with all the desperation of a drowning man. Page 28. How many options does a drowning man have? Two. Drown or hope there's something that's going to keep his head above water. And he's not going to look at that thing that's floating and question, is that buoyant enough? If he's drowning, he doesn't have time to think. Oh, it's covered in glass. I don't know if I want to grab it. But you're not drowning. Ooh, it's on fire. I don't know. You're not drowning. Go drown. When you're desperate, we're ready for you. Or you're ready for us. That's so critical. Guys, how do I find someone who's desperate? How do I know that they're ready? Guys, I'm going to tell you that the number one way to determine if they're ready is if you can determine what their motivation is. Chronic liars. Me and the truth were rarely in the same room. How am I going to tell for sure what this guy's motivation is? I can't. How do I know he's done with step one? How do I know I'm done with step one? The only way I'm going to know I'm truly done with step one is I will die many years from now having lived this way of life like my life depended on it. So essentially, I'm not sure. You know, I've had guys work the program a lot and then someone whispered another solution in their ear and go, I've never tried that. Go try it. If it doesn't work, come back and see us. We'll still be here. So how do you know if he's done with step one? How do you know what his motivation is? Guys, the only thing really going to help is that you sit down and ask this person some serious questions. What made you want to reach out for help? What motivated you to reach out for help with this? Oh, she caught me again. Okay. Well, does that mean his motivation is to save his marriage or to recover? I don't know. But it certainly gives me a path of inquiry to find out why he's here. Because, guys, if his motivation is to recover at any cost, you will have no problem with him. But if his motivation is to save his marriage or his reputation or his job or something else that God eventually will ask him to put on the sacrificial altar, right? When it comes time and we start to, what we're doing conflicts with him, you know, possibly losing that thing, if his motivation is coming in is to save that, where's his work going to go? Out the window. Okay? So, some good pointed questions about why he's here is important. Why are you here? And why did you ask me to sponsor you? That's another thing. Because, you know, in my group, 80% of the men in there stand up when they ask for sponsors. Why me? Well, I heard about you, and I heard, you know, you have those tapes, and I heard those tapes. Okay, you're making it about my personality now. Anyone in here can help you. Everyone in this group works the program the same way. We are all on the same page. We all use the same book exclusively. This is our path out. Any one of them can help you with that. But when you make it about my personality, trust me, we're all actually given to a little bit of ego. And if we let this ego thing slip into our own program, it's not pretty. Become king of the losers, right? Or the perverts, however you want to see it. Okay, so the step one is so critical, determining where they are and having the courage to tell them, you know, I don't think you're done. I think you're here to save a marriage. That's not this program. That's not what we do. We don't save marriages here. Well, I thought if I got sober, she might stay. Yeah, you know, she might not. Will you still be here when she doesn't? Probably not. Well, it didn't work, so I guess I'll try something else. Good luck. Go try something else first. We're not here to save marriages, careers, or reputations. Those are the big three. There are other things, but those are the big three. That's not our job. We're here to show you how to get into a relationship with that which you think is most high in the universe. That's it. That's our only job. We're not even here to get you sober. How about that? Because if we're trying to get you sober and we admit that only God could do it, who are we pretending to be? Make sense? Our job is to show you how we got into a relationship with this higher power, and this higher power, simply because this higher power loves us, provided us with this wonderful gift, removal of the obsession and the ability to react sanely and normally to temptation. That's it. And it's not because I earned it, right? Okay, so the step two stuff, it's easy. Guys, if he's made the identification, well, here's a whole fellowship of people that struggled once as much as you do with this disease that you admitted no higher power could solve. Right? And they point us to this several times in the early chapters, 2 and 3. Okay, it's not solvable by human power, yet these guys found a solution. Okay, right there, if you think you're an atheist, you just disproved it. You're not an atheist. You believe these guys accessed a power greater than human. Therefore, you believe in something. Is it God? I don't care what you call it. Pray to something. The something that saved them, right? You think you're an agnostic. Oh, maybe there's a God, maybe there's not, but he's not involved in human existence. Well, Here's the evidence. Here's the group. The problem not solvable by human means was solved. That's evidence that something greater and human was involved in these men and women's lives. Get over it. But the biggest problem that most people come in the doors with is being a believer. They believe absolutely that whatever is in their head is true. 100% of it. And it cannot be changed. Guys, if you, what you believe is 100% right, then A, either, you know, you wouldn't be acting out, or if what you believe is 100% right, then you're somehow not able to put what you believe into action such that you won't act out. So basically, step two is about opening your mind. A, you could be wrong. You could be wrong about what you believe. You could be wrong about not believing at all. Right? Guys, here's another big one about sponsorship. I don't know how to sponsor you in the program you want to work. Again, that guy asked me to use that easier, softer path through the steps to take him through. I've done it twice and failed. I don't know how to use that program to stay sober. And if I think I do, that's my ego. I'm thinking I can be all things to all people, that I am the solution and not the work. I only have the right to sponsor you in the program that works for me, that got me to a spiritual awakening, that got me to a God who keeps me sober. So, more than that, that also applies to my definition of sobriety. Once upon a time, I thought I could be all things to all people. And, you know, some of the literature indicates, well, we all define our own sobriety. Yeah, to a degree. With the guidance of a sponsor or others in the program. My program says that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my trouble, and that we addicts must be rid of this selfishness or it kills us. And then it goes to the sex inventory and says, we use this simple, or something effective, we use this to shape a sane and sound future for our future sex life. Was it selfish or not? We subjected each relation, not relationship, to this test. Was it selfish or not? Who's it serving? Who does this behavior serve? If you're the only one there, I wonder. Sex is not a necessity. If it were, you'd see priests and nuns' head exploding right and left. Right? Abstinence is a program. It is a sobriety. And guys, you know, that's one. Before I say a third step with a guy, I'm going to find out what his sobriety definition is. And I'm going to use these examples out of the big book, you know. Bottom of page 14, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge a spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Is the behavior perfecting and enlarging your spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others? No? Might be a little selfish. Page 77, three lines down from the top, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service in the God of people, to God and the people about us. Is this behavior fitting you to be of maximum service? No? Might be selfish. Every day, page 85, is a day when we must carry a vision of God's will into all of our activities. In this behavior, am I seeking God's will? Next page, 86. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, what we could pack into the stream of life? Does this behavior contribute positively to the world? No? Might be selfish. So guys, I'm not here to tell this guy what his sobriety should be. I'm giving him tools for defining it. And if he still wants to hold on to something I have to abstain from, I thought I could do that. But those guys ended up slipping in their worst behaviors eventually, either because they should have abstained from the stuff they wanted to hold on to, or because the stuff they wanted to hold on to, I didn't know how to advise them to engage in that behavior healthily. I don't know how to engage in that behavior without setting forth the phenomenon of craving that leads me to a loss of control. I don't know how to tell them how to stay away from the other stuff while still dabbling in this. They want the ability to dabble in this behavior and stay away from the greater behaviors. I don't know how to do that. Therefore, I don't have what they want. It's that simple. I'm not condemning their behavior. I'm just saying, yeah, this is not going to be a match. You probably need someone else to sponsor you. It's that simple. I don't have to sponsor them. I have to carry the message to them. That's it. Hopefully what I've done is plant a seed for them to think about and take out into the world and experiment with to figure out their truth around. I've done lots of people that way. I had to be at a place in my recovery where I was really willing to sacrifice the whole bit. So, how do we get them through the work quickly? I think it's definite. I think, you know, we tell them, we get them through the third step, we start them on a fourth step, we give them some specific directions on how to write a fourth step, and we tell them it's got to get done in a quick amount of time. Guys, in the beginning, I'm going to tell them, you need to set aside your social life. Yeah, you got to work. Yeah, you got to take care of those that depend on you. But, you know, out to dinner with your friends, going to poker, no, that's got to get swept aside because we got to focus here. Get through the work quickly. So what I'm going to do is give him his instructions for his fourth step, and right then, figure within 2 weeks when we're going to sit down and do a fifth step. And guys, doing a fifth step, it's simple. There's a pattern established. Look for the words want. I want, I don't want. That's how I identify when I'm being selfish. Right? What if? That's a fear. Right? They're simple patterns of how I control and manipulate the world. You know, I'm angry because he didn't do what I wanted him to. How much of that does apply to every one of our resentments? Every one of them. And if we're still carrying a resentment around for years, I mean, let's take a look at it. Are we using it to gain power, to feel superior to the person who did that to us? That's my part. These are simple things. And once we establish the pattern, I don't care if he's got a 200-page resentment list. He will see that the 5, 6, at the most 10 character defects apply to every single one of these things. Move through the work. He establishes his pattern. We look at the list and say, is there anything that these character defects don't apply to? If there is, let's talk about it. Maybe there's another character defect we need to add to it. But it's simple. Keep it simple. Stop overcomplicating. I tell people, look, if what you're doing is complicated, it's probably not 12-step. Simple, not easy. It's not easy only because we're being asked to do something we really don't want to do. So, guys, when they start to deviate from that program, when they're not doing their assignments, when they're not doing what I've asked them to do, I say, look, you know what? You're deviating from what keeps me sober, which means you're working your program, which means you're sponsoring you, which means I'm no longer your sponsor. Or maybe I've done something wrong and I didn't spot it, or my own codependency wanted to ease up a little bit, and I have to identify it, and I have to say to them in the end, you know what, this is what I did wrong as your sponsor, so what I'm doing is resigning. Does that mean I'm leaving them, you know, blowing in the wind? No, it means, look, we need to get you to somebody else because I failed you. So let's sit you down with this person over here. I helped them find another sponsor. I'm not abandoning them. And guys, there's so much codependency in this relationship that is rife in our fellowship. I am not here to bond with this person. Bonding may happen. It may not. But that's not my job as a sponsor. My job is to get them to God. Period. That's my only purpose in this, is to show them how to be in a relationship with a higher power such that he gives them that gift of freedom. That's it. That's my only purpose. So, how to get through the work quickly? Guys, people hang up on step 9 too. Well, I got to finish my amends. No, it says we commenced this way of living, 10, 11, and 12, as we cleaned up the past. Get started on those amends, and now let's learn 10, 11, and 12. 10 is basically 12 through 9 compressed together. Anytime I find myself disturbed or upset or twisted up, it's time to grab a scrap of paper out of the trash, pull out a pencil, and jot out a four-column inventory, call my sponsor, ask God to remove it, go apologize to the people I help, and then find a way to serve my fellow man. And it does not have to be an addict. 11, now that I'm starting to clear out that noise with 4 through 9, those guilts, those shames, those angers, those fears, they're starting to get cleared out. The noise starts to reduce here. I spend quiet time listening for God. Now, personally, I say, if you've got readings to do, the book says do them after the quiet time. Because I believe, and I know it in my heart, that God has a specific message for each one of you. It may be that book, it may not. But if I read that book beforehand, I'm going to have those thoughts in my head instead of clearing my thoughts, listening for what's specific for me. So I get quiet first because God has something specific for me. He may also want to tell me that stuff in the book that he's telling to everybody all at once, but he's got a specific message for me. 12, I got to reach out to him. And guys, we talked about this. Serving the fellowship is great, but I got to carry the message out into my community. It can be done with letters, cards, it can be done with phone calls. And if you worry, I'm in Dallas, and if I worry about someone finding out, you know, Dallas is a big place, and I'm not that important. Someone finds out, oh, well, you know, I'm not that big a deal. If you're a big deal, you live in a small town, and you're a big deal in your small town, guess what? Within driving distance, there's probably another town where they don't know you, because you know what? You're not that big a deal. Stop thinking so much of yourself. Isn't that your problem? Isn't that what pride is? Definition of pride, an excessive opinion of myself? What if I lose my reputation? Well, you know what? Dr. Bob thought he had a reputation, yet everyone knew. This guy's a drunk. Okay. I'm going to tie it up right there. I'll be around. Ask me questions. If we want to gather together for another group outside of this, that's fine. God bless and thank you for letting me talk.